morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is April 24th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy hump day, Melody.
Yes, it is Wednesday. I can't fool you, can I now?
Yeah, you try.
Hey, Wendy Wilson is joining us today from Apothecary Herbs, but we're going to get to the market report right now. We have gold today. At least it was a little bit to the upside off the high of 1279, looking at 1276, basically 1277, up 350. Silver finally back up over 1505, up 13 cents. Platinum was down $5 at 887, and palladium continues up a little over 1 1/3%, $1,420. The USDX today was up 48 at 98.08. Crude oil was down 54 cents at 65.76. And the paper markets today, looks like the Dow was down 58 points at 26,598. And the NASDAQ was down 18 at 81.02. S&P down 6 at 29.27. Boeing's profit fell 21% on the 737 crisis, the MAX. That's a big hit, and which is kind of interesting because isn't Boeing in the Dow, Dave?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so that's down 21%, yet the Dow is doing these incredible numbers. But anyway, a little bit of averaging, I guess. But alrighty, let's see. Asian and European markets are unchanged, and just an interesting day in the markets, and we'll talk about those after the first segment of today's program, because we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about this new antibiotic that's in the development stage. It's not going to be out for a couple of years, but it's just it caught my eye. And we have serious problems currently with a lot of bacterial and fungal anti-drug-resistant pathogens. So new antibiotics and new antifungal agents are needed by mainstream medicine. Now, for years, the drug companies kind of shifted their research focus away from antibiotics and antifungal drugs to antiviral drugs and manufacturing more vaccines. But there's been this recent research into the hunt for new substances that the drug companies can use to make antibiotics out of. So according to this report from the Florida International University, their information was published in the February 2019 Journal of Communications Biology and also the Journal of Nature. So they say they have this new broad-spectrum antibiotic that's in the works, and it's supposed to have the potential to kill the drug-resistant strains of bacteria. So as there are great hopes for this drug. And keep in mind, our original antibiotics, the so-called wonder drugs, we actually got killer bacteria from using those because of misuse. So we have to wonder what this next generation of antibiotics is going to bring humanity. There's really no secret. Science will go out looking for substances. Typically, they use a lot of substances from the soil to make antibiotics. So turning over rocks, going into caves, dissecting organic matter is what they do to find elements to make the next billion-dollar drug from, especially the drug manufacturer. So the international team of researchers from the Florida International University Herbert Wertmann College of Medicine, they reported that they found this broad-spectrum natural antibiotic element. And sounds like good news, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe an answer to prayer for those suffering from these unstoppable bacterial infections. But what is the element? Well, apparently, your standard arsenic is found in soil. So the new antibiotic drug is going to be named arsenothriacin. And yes, it's going to be marketed as a natural antibiotic, but it's made from arsenic. What do you think of that?
Well, Dave.
I wouldn't necessarily advise putting that too prominently on the label, but you know, they certainly should be required to.
Well, according to the cellular biology and pharmacology team, this new antibiotic is, they say, is already going to show very good effectiveness to fighting E. coli infections. So they say it's very broad spectrum. It kills many types of bacteria. So they have great hope for it. And the medical and scientific community is proclaiming that new antibiotics like this will be safe for humans. And in the past, you know, we've had antibiotic overuse. So we have to ask, what may happen when we misuse an arsenic-based drug? See, here's a quote from the biology team on the research. They said, although arsenothriacin, this is the arsenic antibiotic, contains arsenic, we have tested it for toxicity on human blood cells and report it does not kill human cells in tissue culture. So we have great hopes for it. But, you know, here again, we're talking about a few cells in a petri dish, you know. So the average person, I think, knows the word arsenic, wouldn't you think?
I would think so.
And they know it's a toxin to the body. So I think it's going to be an eyebrow moment for anybody to learn that they were prescribed an antibiotic that is a known toxin and carcinogen in it. So why are they using arsenic? Well, science has been using arsenic to combat microbes and supposedly to treat even cancer. So they've used arsenic in a lot of anti-cancer drugs. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
I didn't either. That was an eye-opener for me. Here's a quote from Dr. Barry Rosen with the Department of Cellular Biology on this research. He said, people get scared when they hear the word arsenic because it can be a toxin and a carcinogen. Arsenic has antimicrobials and anti-cancer agents, and it has been well established. So what they've used arsenic for is for treating leukemia patients. But the average leukemia patient lives 5 years after treatment.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, let's get into a little arsenic history because this is kind of interesting. According to Dr. Paul Ehrlich, he says arsenic is used to treat syphilis, and it was added also to the chemotherapy drugs to treat leukemia. So in the Journal of Military and Veterans Health, there was this article titled Arsenic, the Poison of Kings and the Savior of Syphilis, which states that arsenic is a substance well known to both healer and poisoner. So the report went on to state that arsenic is a very potent neurological and liver toxin. It is known to attack your lungs, your bladder, and your skin. And history shows that arsenic has often been used to kill off kings and emperors and those that have rich inheritances. So Dr. Ehrlich also discovered that when they used arsenic for syphilis, they started using it in 1909. And syphilis back then was called the Great Pox, so it was a problem. Now, the U.S. Army has also used arsenic in chemical warfare agents, such as in 1918, they used it for respiratory irritants. And arsenic is listed by the CDC as a bioterrorism agent. So it doesn't look too good if patients find out their antibiotic has arsenic in it, does it?
Mm. Yeah, but most of them won't find out.
Well, the term arsenic is translated from the Greek arsenikon, which means masculine or potent. And even Hippocrates, the father of medicine, he also wrote about the toxic effects of arsenic in 370 BC. He noted that similar results were also derived using mercury as a neurotoxin, and you see mercury used in vaccines. He also noted that when you have arsenic, the side effects could be abdominal colic. You get a lot of cramping. He says you also get the same similar response when you have other minor metal elements entering the body. He said that he used arsenic topically for salves and ointments to treat abscesses and ulcers. Now, the Chinese also wrote about using arsenic in their history. In their medicine book around 200 BC, they used arsenic poisoning to counteract another poison. And arsenic is this odorless and tasteless substance, which made it virtually undetectable. And it's been the poison of choice throughout much of history. They also added it to wine, they say, to improve the taste. And I think this is how Napoleon got poisoned, because they tested his wine bottles and found arsenic in them.
Reminds me of the old movie Arsenic and Old Lace. They get to say,
right.
What a Cary Grant, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what they used elderberry wine.
Right. Well, initially, some of the side effects, if you're being poisoned with arsenic, they tend to mimic food poisoning, but then it shifts into paralysis and then death. So arsenic poisoning became such a problem by the 18th century, they developed this post-mortem test. It was developed in 1836 by an English chemist, James Marsh. Now, in the 16th century, physicians and barber surgeons also used arsenic to treat, get this, anthrax.
Huh.
So physicians often mixed their own remedies, and in 1786, a British doctor, Thomas Fowler, he called his arsenic treatment liqueur minerals, and later it was renamed Fowler's solution. It did get listed in the London's Pharmacopoeia. And it got dispensed for various things. They used it for malaria, fever, headaches, rashes, anemia, blood pressure, gastric ulcers, rheumatism, and even tuberculosis. And they also, back then, used it to treat leukemia until the invention of your chemotherapy and radiation treatments in the early 1920s. And what they would do is they would mix the arsenic with bismuth. And bismuth is a metal that resembles arsenic and mercury, and they use that to treat syphilis. It's, you know, kind of alchemy science at its best, basically.
Well, you know, they use botulism for Botox, and they use to help migraines. So
right.
Is it a possibility that, I mean...
Well, medical science does have a history of using toxins or poisons like this under what they call controlled circumstances. Your blood thinning drugs, warfarin, is rat poison, but just in small amounts, because when they used rat poison, it would cause the rats to bleed internally. So what they did is they just reduced the dose enough just to thin your blood, but not to make you die from it. So, but people, when they found out they were taking rat poisoning for blood thinners, they kind of didn't like that.
Yeah.
But this arsenic, getting back to this arsenic antibiotic, it's not going to be on the market for several years. They have to do some more testing. But you, at least you know where science is headed, where they're delving into. The problem is they have to really work through and be dedicated to look at reactionary complications with drugs like this. They really need to do some testing, because a lot of people are on numerous medicines, which are already taxing their liver, and arsenic is a burden on the liver. It attacks the liver, and it also attacks your brain center. It's a neurotoxin, so they have to really watch that. If you're going to have an arsenic-based antibiotic, it may be too much toxicity for some people. Another combination they have to look at is vaccines that contain mercury, again, another neurotoxin. So, somebody who's been vaccinated, let's say with booster shots or flu shots or whatever, you may not want to prescribe this medication, because it would be too much of a neurotoxin, see?
Do doctors really take any of that into consideration? They hear, oh, this is a great new product, and, you know, because these pharmaceuticals, and I wanted to ask you too, you had two of those head distribution of these pharmaceuticals not OxyContin, but the opioids, they were arrested and charged.
Well, I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, because here we are thinking that justice is gone from our shores. So, that's kind of a good thing, when people are held accountable. For so long, the pharmaceutical companies, have just paid lobbyists, and they get a, go pass card, and then they just pay the fine, because they've made millions already selling the drug. It's just a drop in the bucket to pay the fine. But people suffered, people died. They should go to jail.
Yeah.
you said. Absolutely. But you know what? The thing, fortunately for us, though, you know, we do have herbs that have compact nutrients that really science hasn't been able to even list all those nutrients. They've tried to dissect herbs, and they want to make elemental drug pharmaceuticals from them, but we have the herbs, so no need to wait for science to figure it out. You know, I think God's chemistry is just fine the way it is. So we have the power, though, right now to avoid many of these illnesses just using herbs, so we don't have to risk ourselves to maybe something that the chemists and the pharmaceutical people missed when testing an arsenic antibiotic. So should we prepare for pandemics? Yes, do be prepared. It's going to be critical. But I don't think there's a need to panic. Being prepared, having the right tools, I think we'll be just fine.
I think so, too. And that's what it's all about, is being prepared. We talk about that all the time on this program, being prepared right. financially. So you right. also have to do it for your, you know, things that you can do then, and have items that you probably won't have access to in the future.
Right. You know, now it would be the time while you still have access to a lot of things that the supply chain hasn't erupted and you have distribution disruption. I mean, it's really important, you know, to get what you can now if you can get it. Because I've seen over the years little hiccups and things where some of these ingredients that we need to make our products are out and we got to wait, you know. So I'm seeing that now. So when they come back into, you know, availability, we tend to buy a lot of it because we don't know when the next time you won't have it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's smart. Yeah. That's smart. Well, give us some of your contact information, Wendy. We got about a minute left.
Well, okay. The folks at Apothecary Herbs have a pandemic kit, and they have some full line of antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, immune boosting formulas, all, you know, herbs from the Lord above. So call Apothecary Herbs. They have the professional strength formulas, organic professional strength, and you won't find that in stores. The number's toll free, 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. Website has a bunch of information. Go there, thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com. It's where your healthcare options just became endless.
Do you have any specials?
We just finished our Resurrection Sunday, but we will have a Mother's Day sale coming up soon, and our new catalog should be arriving around the 1st of May, so we're real excited about that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Can't wait to see it.
I'll send you one.
Thank you. Phone number one more time.
866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. Have a great day.
You too, Wendy. Talk to you next week. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll be hearing from us in just a few short minutes. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you right.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I was going over to some of my inventory list. We got a boatload of quarter-ounce American Gold Eagles that we can include them in with some 1-ounce American Silver Eagles. I'll price them up during the break. So this will be a great little special for you, ladies and gentlemen. And quarter-ounce, or give us a call in the meantime. Talk to Carla, and she'll price that out for you and tell her I was talking about a special to make sure she gives you, she really always does, she gets better specials than I do sometimes, but anyway, maybe I shouldn't be saying that, but she'll take care of you until I get off the program, if you're listening live at the 4 p.m. Eastern program, 4 p.m. Eastern time, that is. So, Dave.
Melody.
Well, you know, mortgage apps, I mean, one day we talk about refinancing is down. The next day we talk about new home sales are up. And now today we show mortgage applications fall 7.3% last week. So it did seem like these homeowners had been brushing off the slight rise in rates. But now these rates are moving even higher, and we're seeing purchasers are now pulling back. The overall mortgage application volume fell 7.3% last week. It was still higher than a year ago, but it fell 7.3% last week, and this is according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. And it looks like the 30-year rate fixed rate mortgages with conforming loan balance of $484,000 or less increased to 4.46%. So people are buying bigger and more expensive homes. We've seen this rate, the rate has risen 10 basis points in the past 3 weeks, and of course now it's at its highest level in over a month.
Yeah, applications to refinance a home loan, which are the most sensitive to interest rates, fell 11% for the week, but were almost 13% higher than 1 year ago. Mortgage rates were a significant 27 basis points higher last year. Now, mortgage apps to purchase a home, which have been holding strong amid higher rates, fell 4% for the week, but again, we're still 3% higher than the year ago. Supply was up 2.4% annually at the end of March. That's according to the National Association of Realtors, but much of that increase isn't from more new listings. Instead, existing listings are sitting for a longer period of time and are beginning to pile up, taking longer to sell.
Well, you know, I think this is probably, I don't know, this is just my thoughts. Maybe this is the reason why Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to focus on impeachment, because she made the announcement yesterday that she is very optimistic about finding a bipartisan path to passing both an infrastructure proposal and a measure to cut drug prices. Both Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are going to meet with President Trump next Tuesday morning to discuss a potential plan to revamp the U.S. infrastructure. And you know what, Dave, it really is interesting, because it's right on cue. And that's what I mean. I think this is all, you know, this whole thing has all been done by design. You have the tax reform that was there to boost the economy, and that's good. Temporary, but good. You know, it's stimulus. You know, the economy isn't functioning on its own. It needs stimulus. What do you think is going to happen when you have $1 trillion going into the U.S. infrastructure? So it will keep the economy going stronger, I would think, Dave, at least until the election, if they get something passed quickly in this U.S. infrastructure, and of course the measure to cut drug prices, you know, that's been President Trump's, you know, one of his pet projects. So, you know, that's, you know, Schumer and Pelosi will help to help on the cutting of the drug prices, and Trump will do the infrastructure. So that's the way I see it. But, you know, they still have to agree on how to finance the project. But, hey, money's no object in Washington, right?
Well, they are prolific writers, aren't they, in that respect? Or I should say prolific printers of the good old greenback. I don't see certainly the an infrastructure plan coming together. I see there's more likelihood, particularly now that there's momentum given the arrest of some of the players in you know, those who manufacture and distribute these opioids like fentanyl and OxyContin. I believe that creates momentum for possibly creating a bipartisan coalition for dealing with the drug, that prescription drug cost crisis. On the other hand, I just have a feeling there's just going to be too many naysayers, perhaps too many proposals among particularly members of the Senate in terms of how much money they're going to support for this. Now, you know, if Pelosi and Schumer and Trump work out a deal, you know, that certainly may produce some kind of bill that comes out of the House. But again, I just think with you know, unless we're talking about a real modest number, like, you know, $100, $200, $300 billion, as opposed to, you know, close to the $1 trillion figure that, you know, the consensus is that's probably the minimum that's needed nationwide to make a dent in our crumbling airports, bridges, and highways. But as we like to say on Financial Survival, we shall see, Melody.
Well, you know what? I don't know. They're going to be pumping for if the economy needs it to keep it together. You know, because the Democrats, what can the Democrats run on? They can't run on a bad economy. So, you know.
No, it'll be Trump. If it turns bad, it'll be Trump's economy. That's what they'll run on.
Yeah, but, you know, Trump is going to try to keep it strong, as they always do during, you know, so I don't know. It's, but $1 trillion, and you know, they're not going to spend they might say they're going to spend $200 billion in order to get a deal done, but we all know that they're looking at $1 trillion plus to do anything significant. Or, you know, to me, what's the point? It's like people holding 5% and 10% of gold of their assets. It's like, what's the point? You know, got a couple $1 million and you hold 5%. What's the point? You know, it's just like you have a couple $1 million home value. What's the point of insuring it for 5%? It doesn't make sense. But well, we also heard President Trump has appeared to reverse course on Harley Davidson, pledging to retaliate against unfair European Union tariffs that the company partially blamed for its nearly 27% drop in the first quarter. Trump has called for a boycott against the motorcycle company just last year amid the spat over steel, and said that the EU tariffs have forced Harley to move U.S. jobs overseas. So unfair to U.S., we will reciprocate. And, of course, Harley had announced plans last year to move production of its motorcycles destined for the EU to overseas facilities from the U.S. just to avoid these tariffs. So Trump also threatened higher taxes as part of the retaliation in addition to the boycott.
Yep, That's true. I mean, Harley said it hasn't moved jobs overseas due to tariffs, but, you know, moving production of EU motorcycles to their plant in Thailand. You know, that came on late last year to support customers supposedly in that region. Harley said no jobs were impacted in the U.S. as a result of that move. But it did say that falling demand plus higher costs from U.S. tariffs on raw materials and European taxes on imports of its motorcycles hurt its earnings in the first quarter. You know, Harley has struggled with a drop in sales in the U.S. amid fears that younger buyers are simply less interested in motorcycles than previous generations. Harley's been trying to get more people excited about riding motorcycles again. In November, it started to preview its Livewire electric motorcycle in the U.S. And also in Europe, in an attempt to attract more riders overall, focusing, of course, on younger ones.
Well, you know, push those gasoline prices up to four.
Yeah,
four,
right.
$4. They'll start looking at looking at bikes once again. And so that's what it's all about. You know, that's why you have all these big trucks being sold. You know, gasoline's cheap, so people go bigger. Gasoline gets expensive, people go smaller. It's really that simple. And they just keep pushing the people back and forth from one end to the other. And they just go along very happily. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, about the new American trade deal with, the USMCA. And there's a lot of reports that it's just going to have a marginal effect on our economy. It could boost the output by just a little over a third percent, 0.35%, and deliver an even smaller gain to the labor market. Now, this is coming out of this independent analysis by International Trade Commission, and it's a big report, almost as big as the Mueller report. It's 379 pages, and the ITC, which is the International Trade Commission, said that the USMC agreement would have a positive effect, and notably, the deal would increase auto parts production, employment. And but the narrow benefits for the auto sector would come at the expense of the broader economy, making overall U.S. production more expensive, reducing exports, and denting wages and employment.
Yeah, this will be interesting. Congress required this assessment, which was delayed for over a month because of the partial government shutdown. You know, before lawmakers end up holding an up or down vote on the entire agreement. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said tougher enforcement measures need to be written into the deal to make sure that Mexico complies with the promised labor reforms. Several other prominent lawmakers, including Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who chairs the Senate Finance Committee, say the president must remove tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from Mexico and Canada before they vote. You know, both countries have imposed retaliatory measures that have damaged U.S. exports, you know, especially from farm states, as we've reported off and on over the last year plus. Administration officials said last year that the tariffs would be eliminated once the three countries reached a new trade deal. But instead, they've remained in place while the U.S. tries to get Mexico and Canada to accept quotas on their shipments of industrial metals.
So where are we really on all of this, you know? I mean,
close, but no cigar yet.
Yes, I guess that's a great way of putting it. But it could be how long before they get it done?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's all still running on the old NAFTA. Nothing has changed, except prices have gotten higher, right? Pretty much.
Right.
So anyway, we're hopeful. But, and, you know, we all know Congressman Ron Paul, former Texas Congressman Ron Paul, and he is on the attack against wasteful government spending in his latest weekly column. And he's equating government spending of your hard-earned tax dollars to outright theft. And he is correct. That's exactly what it is, outright theft. He says the tax cuts that aren't paired with spending cuts are deferred tax increases. Imagine being robbed every time you get a paycheck, but then once a year the people who robbed you give you a chunk of change back because they stole more than they intended. Would you be happy about that, Paul asks? Of course, most people answer yes because they're just happy to get something back. But the reality is that a tax refund means more taxes were taken from you than you legally owed. In other words, you just gave the government an interest-free loan thanks to withholding, which isn't right. And in Paul's view, my view.
Melody, Paul also believes that, you know, withholding in and of itself, which was supposed to be a temporary measure to help finance World War II, is just an insidious way of minimizing the pain, you know, of and thus opposition to taxes. You know, because people never actually get possession of the money the government withholds. They don't miss it. Imagine how great public demand for an end to the income tax would be if every month we had to write a check to the IRS. As now, you know, millions of particularly self-employed people do, but I mean, they have to write quarterly payments, not monthly. You know, this year, most Americans are owing less in taxes because of last year's tax reform. You know, unfortunately, the benefits to the country of the tax cut are going to be temporary because Congress and the president refused to cut spending. You know, in fact, in the last two years, federal spending increased by about 7.5%, or around $300 billion. That's thanks to the spending spree, the federal deficit will reach $1 trillion this year, while the federal debt is now over $22 trillion. That's in excess of 100% of GDP.
And, you know, that doesn't even count the almost $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities, which includes the $70 trillion in future Social Security and Medicare benefits. And spending is going to increase for the foreseeable future. House Democrats have proposed increasing welfare spending by 5.7% to $630 billion. And government spending diverts resources from the private sector, damaging the economy, lowering our living standards. But who in D.C. are willing to address these issues? It is true whether the spending is financed by direct taxes or debt. Deficit spending, the resulting pressure on the Fed to monetize the debt, increases the hidden and regressive inflation tax. And again, ladies and gentlemen, politicians will only cut spending when the people stop demanding security and start demanding liberty. 1-800-375-4188. We're heading into a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. Let's see, where do we want to go? Let's talk just briefly about Jim Bianco, Bloomberg. He wrote an opinion piece that most everybody seems to be wondering what's happened to inflation. Why hasn't it returned? It's here. It has returned. It's just, you have to accept it. You have to make the announcement that it's here.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's here and everything would go off the scale, you know. But hey, as long as you deny it, then I guess it isn't happening. And the answer matters to the Federal Reserve's unique status as a central bank. They have this rare dual mandate of maximum employment and stable prices, Dave. And Bianco says that the evidence is mounting that this dual mandate is clouding the Fed's judgment. I don't know if this is correct, but especially at a time when the relationship between inflation and employment is being openly questioned. But Congress made the mandate before. Bianco suggests that Congress should give the Fed a mandate of full employment and financial stability, or a mandate of low inflation and financial stability. So they have a choice: full employment and financial stability, or low inflation and financial stability. Do they really know what they're doing, Dave? This is just Fed speak. It means nothing, but go ahead. It's fun.
Well, you know, it's a good question. It's a, you know, is the tail wagging the dog, or, you know, vice versa? Yeah. You know, this dual mandate to work, you know, the Fed needs a unifying theory. So, you know, a change in monetary policy affects the mandate the same way and by the same amount. You know, the economists say without a unifying theory, change in monetary policy just caught up with, you know, conflicting and contradictory outcomes when they try to satisfy two goals at once. You know, to find a unifying theory, the Fed turned to this Phillips curve developed by economist A.W. Phillips in 1958. You know, Phillips' theory, as many listeners, you know, his theory is that, you know, inflation and unemployment have a stable and measurable inverse relationship. You know, in short, low unemployment causes inflation. But it's been controversial from its inception. And current Fed Vice Chair Richard Clarita argues that the link between inflation and unemployment, you know, still exists and is so strong that the Fed can target inflation alone and the employment mandate will also be satisfied. I don't know about the, you know, well, go ahead, Melody. You want to finish?
Well, you know, I mean, you have to ask yourself, and it's just all about keeping the system balanced. That's what it's all about. And again, I remember Greenspan. I said this just the other day on the program. Alan Greenspan says it's not what the Fed does. It's just what they say. Because no one really knows. I truly believe they really don't know how the system is maintaining itself. I think they've lost the fundamentals or the workings of our economy. Once we went onto the fiat currency and we've closed the gold window, and after every recession, they created all these programs to bring us out of the recessions all by debt. They just got to be sitting there thinking, what's next that we can do to keep this going? And that's what I truly believe they are doing. What can we do next to keep this going? Because you just can't continue to print and get into the trillions and trillions, the hundreds of trillions of dollars, and have markets and banking and everything else work. It just doesn't happen. And so, again, it's not what the Federal Reserve does. It's what the Federal Reserve says, and what they say just builds that confidence that's needed to keep these markets flowing. Because once that confidence is broken, then we have what we had in 2008. Yeah, you can blame it on the housing market. You can blame it on this. You can blame it on the derivatives and so forth. But the degree of confidence was broken. So once those banks failed, there was questions to, you know, how this is going to continue. And that's why they bailed out the two bigs. And so, you know, we could it be that the Fed is afraid to abandon this linkage? You know, if it truly is a linkage between inflation and growth, because they are unable to accomplish this dual mandate without it. Janet Yellen used to say expansions don't die of old age. Ben Bernanke added they get murdered instead, Dave. So,
well, maybe that's a little self-effacing truth about those who served and those who probably, I guess that's a roundabout acknowledgement of acknowledgement that, one, they may not know what they're doing, that their actions have consequences beyond their breadth of knowledge. Yeah, it's been 40 years since Congress established this dual mandate. Maybe it's time for Congress, you know, to give new ones. We'll, I'm going to be writing more about this in our newsletter next Monday, so stay tuned for that, ladies and gentlemen.
But you know what? It's interesting, though, because this mandate has been going on for more than 40 years, but we didn't. That was all the pre-digital and information age economy. So are even these Federal Reserve banks, or not or central banks worldwide, do they really have any impact at all other than the speak? Or is it, you know, through these multinational corporations, their buyback, their, I mean, because these things are being done that has no control from the Federal Reserve, but yet it sort of keeps, or are these two separate things? I think the stock markets anymore are the economies.
Yeah, I mean they're interrelated, you know, whatever you want to say about the Fed. They certainly do have an impact on the market, and you know, you raise a good point about the digital and information age economy, that things today aren't anywhere close to what they were in the 1970s when, you know, this Federal Reserve Reform Act was passed, and this dual mandate of unemployment and inflation, you know, along with moderate long-term interest rates, you know, were put into effect. You know, that there's been so much stated recently, primarily on the heels of Trump's and other officials, you know, calling out the Fed for interest rate hikes last year, that you know, maybe, you know, calling into question the independence of the Fed. And maybe that's what we ought to be looking at. Maybe, I mean, I've been reading more where it's not widespread, but they're more than just a handful of economists who are asking, you know, should the fate of our economy essentially rest in large part in the hands of unelected officials?
Shouldn't. Federal Reserve shouldn't be there.
And, you know, is the Fed the essence of the Fed itself? And its ownership, you know, does that run counter to you know, the fact that, you know, it's sort of run of, by, and for the banking system? And we've just seen time and time again, you know, what happens to not just the U.S., but now the global economy. when wrong decisions are made. And the Fed has essentially created every recession in the last 50 years. So to answer your question, do they know what they're doing?
I know it's funny you said they created every recession, you know, and that was the whole point of bringing in the Fed, is to, you know, to avoid the booms and the busts, and yet here they are creating the recessions. You know, it really is kind of, but the normal GDP does, which I fondly call, ladies and gentlemen, the generally dumb public, is just, it's so far over their head, and they can't. They're so busy with their lives, they don't understand this. We do these radio shows. The listeners, you listen to this on a daily basis. You have a better understanding of what's being, you know, how we've all sort of been buffaloed, thinking that they can really carry this out. And but the majority of the public out there, the general populace, doesn't have an idea. You know, if you walk up to somebody on the street and you talk about the Federal Reserve, and as you said, Dave, you know, these people, they're not elected. They're, you know, the point is the Federal Reserve is a, you know, look who owns it. Look at the design of the, you know, of the corporation itself. People don't know this. They just think it's an arm of the government. It's been there for so long that it's just you know, widely accepted, and everybody talks about all the other central banks around the world that they think it's just a normal part of government business. But so we'll look forward to your article on Monday. We also have your, this change the topic a little bit to get a little bit lighter before we go into some other things. Kim Jong-un is in Russia for talks with Putin. I saw a little bit of, so let's get started. We only have 5 minutes left. Brevity is golden, Dave. 640 words added to the dictionary. Tell us about a few of them.
Hey, Melody. Get swole.
Swole?
S-W-O-L-E. Mm. Prepare a bug-out bag.
I know what that is.
Grab a go-cup. And maybe you'll have a better chance of surviving the omnicide. Mm. Mm. In other words, hit gym and bulk up. Put a bunch of stuff essential for survival in an easy-to-carry bag, grab a drink for the road, and perhaps you'll live through a man-made disaster that could wipe out the human race. Well, those are just a few of the 640 addition to Merriam-Webster's dictionary this year. Pete Sokolowski, who's Merriam-Webster's editor-at-large, said deciding what gets included is a painstaking process involving the company's roughly 24 lexicographers. As we reported last year around this time, the words are added to the online dictionary first, but some are added later to the print updates of the company's popular collegiate dictionary. And according to a company spokesperson, the dictionary has sold more than 50 million copies since 1898, making it the best-selling hardcover book after the Bible. The latest editions include mostly new words or phrases, but also some old words with new meanings or applications. Take unplug and snowflake, for example. Unplug means to literally tug an electric plug from a wall socket. But now it has a more metaphorical meaning as well, as in to disconnect from social media or to disconnect from daily life in general. And yes, a snowflake is still a beautiful ice crystal that floats from the sky during wintertime. But now it also is, you know, a usually disparaging meaning of someone who is overly sensitive, or I've heard it in the context of someone who doesn't have, who has a lot of airspace in between the ears. Omnicide, which means the destruction of all life, dates to the Cold War and was used in reference to the threat of nuclear annihilation. And then there's EGOT, E-G-O-T. You know, a noun that refers to an entertainer who's won an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and a Tony. You know, with the rapid advance of science, many new words come from the fields of technology and medicine. Sokolowski said, we need the dictionary more than ever now that we have information flying from all directions. Couldn't agree with him more, Melody. And that is this week's Brevity is Golden.
Very interesting. And when they... when they change the meaning of a word, do they keep the old meaning, or
Yes, yeah, they just add to it in their definition.
Well, when you're in school and the teacher asks you to put it into a sentence, which do you use?
that's a good question. I'm sure more than one youngster has probably gotten into trouble by attributing an old-fashioned word to some provocative new meaning.
Oh, it just makes me feel old. Well, you know, I wanted to talk about Kim Jong-un. He stepped off his khaki green armored train. That's the new word for dictionary. In a Far Eastern Russia today, he was smiling. He was upbeat and with the summit with Vladimir Putin. And he first met with Russian officials at the train station near the border of North Korea before traveling to the Russia's Pacific port city. And the summit is actually tomorrow. So I think that's going to be interesting. It's his first visit to Russia as a North Korean leader. And the last time was when his father was there in 2011, Dave.
But it will be interesting to follow up on that for sure.
Yeah, we'll have to talk a little bit more about this, see what happens until Friday or tomorrow. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, be safe. Good night and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.